With that, we're done with the appointments. Item three, please.
A resolution by Supervisors Dmitrijevich, Broderick, and Roma West, amending Chapter 1 of the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances, affirming the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors as the principal policy-making body for Milwaukee County government. This item was laid over during our September meeting cycle to the call of the chair.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Supervisor Dmitrijevich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have submitted a substitute resolution. There were just a few changes, and I thought rather than an amendment, I'll just do a substitute. So if you'll allow me, Mr. Chair, you have it in front of you. And the changes are basically, let me just line up the numbers here. Lines 103 to 122, and they were per the questions and recommendations from members on this committee. So, Mr. Chairman, I want to first move substitution. And around line 116, other political activity, I believe, got to Supervisor Alexander's concerns about elected officials engaging in lobbying. Of course, we encourage that here. We just want to make sure, as it mentions, that you're encouraged to lobby, but if you're not representing the county's position, that you clearly state that and make it clear. There's nothing preventing you from lobbying, but we definitely encourage supervisors or any members of this government to represent the fact that they are lobbying the position of Milwaukee County, and if they're not, to be clear about that. So I just want, rather than not allowing people to lobby on their own. So that was a cleanup. And then the other additional language on 119, if I could read it into the record, further, no privately funded lobbying activity shall be engaged by any official elected or appointed on behalf of any policy position that is not the adopted or stated position of Milwaukee County government. Again, as you know, we welcome, in fact, we have many different groups, private groups, some are funded, some are grassroots, that support our positions or not, but we want to be very clear that if it's privately funded, that no privately funded organization can state that they're acting on behalf of Milwaukee County when, in fact, perhaps sometimes there may be a position contrary to our adopted position. So I know it's a bit confusing, but we want to make this standardized and clean and clear. And then the other 103 to 114 gets at our procedure for adopting our position, the county position, and it's kind of a three-step procedure, much you're already aware of, which is that the policy decision comes from this committee, then it goes to the board, but in a kind of urgent situation, which is an extreme rarity but happens sometimes in the budget, if there was a fast-moving item in the state budget and we couldn't convene this committee or the board to adopt a official position, then it would be the chair of the county board as well as the IGR chair. I'll give you an idea. Let's say it's a last-minute budget amendment. Jamie and Patty call us, and it's counterproductive to our transit funding. We want to be able to respond quickly. I think it'll be extremely rare, but we wanted to have a mechanism and be clear to you all what we would do in that urgent situation. So I think this is very standardized, transparent, accountable, and an attempt to get to members' concerns. So I move substitution, Mr. Chair.
Very good. The motion is to substitute. Is there any objection to substitution? Substitution. The item is substituted.
Okay. Then I'd like to move approval, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Dmitrijevich moves approval of the item. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, could we take just a moment to read through this?
Certainly.
Thank you.
May I, Mr. Chair, just mention, I'm sorry that
certainly
we didn't have this available in advance in Legistar, but there's not a mechanism for substitutes to go into. So I apologize for that.
Okay. I'm sorry. I have a little parliamentary, or at least Milwaukee County parliamentary, apparently we are required to vote on substitution.
I thought
my recent lesson in parliamentary procedure at WCA, I thought I was told that any time the committee wanted to do it unanimously, it was possible, but we have a custom here, and we'll stick to it for now.
Robert's rules of order.
Okay.
I'm sorry. You can continue.
Nope, that was it.
Okay. All right, so we'll take a vote on substitution then.
Alexander?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Dmitrievich?
Aye.
Roma West?
Aye.
Cullen?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to substitute is approved.
Thank you. And now Supervisor Dmitrievich moves
approval
of the substitute resolution as presented. Ms. Tohorst.
Good morning.
You have comments, questions?
Sure.
Okay.
I didn't really think I would be here this morning, but have the pleasure of addressing the committee.
Welcome.
Chairman, supervisors. As I have just received a substitute amendment that was difficult to quickly assess the ramifications of how this would affect the county executive. Clearly, I initially have some concerns with number 5, addressing county executives' free speech as a private citizen. There could be some clarification provided on privately funded lobbying activities shall be engaged by any official elected or appointed on any position that is not the adopted or stated position of Milwaukee County. That would be appreciated.
Sure. Mr. Chairman?
Certainly. Supervisor Dmitrievich.
Okay. Well, this wasn't intended for anyone in particular, but it just means that any privately funded lobbying cannot basically, as it says here, say that they're lobbying on behalf of Milwaukee County when it's not our adopted position. So, some other subgroup that perhaps someone would contract with, plenty of people can privately lobby, and they do, and we encourage that, but they cannot represent that it's Milwaukee County's position if it indeed is not. We don't want, that would be counterproductive. We have one adopted county position. And I do want to remind those people who are listening and watching that the county executive, of course, has free speech. If he does not like our position, he can veto it. He is under Section 5 here, starting on 116, can also, if he doesn't agree with the position, as he's done in the past, he can lobby on his own as county executive. I respect that. But he would need to make sure that he reminds people that that's not the adopted position if it's in contrary. I, like your comments at the last meeting, would agree that hopefully about 90% of the time we'll be lobbying together on the same position. I think that's really focused on collaboration. I really look forward to that. So thank you.
Very good. Stohorst?
The other item I just wanted to make reference to was the fact that it's currently county executive's state statute authority to hire and supervise all department heads, and the number 6 could be construed as the county board overreaching policy into administration, and considering cause for discharge, suspension, or demotion perhaps reaches into authority that isn't granted to the county board.
Can I respond to that?
You may, Supervisor Dmitrievich. Otherwise, we do have Mr. Grady in the room. I don't know if he's seen this, but perhaps he could comment on the way in which the county has broad policies covering all employees.
Sure. I just wanted, as the author... So I think we all need a refresher, too, because time passes and we've got a lot going on here. The inspiration for this as well was it's very similar. In fact, that line 124 in the penalty comes from the city of Milwaukee's, which I think the county executive uses a lot when he talks about lobbying practices. This is the model that we used, and there is a penalty because, quite frankly, think about this. If we have department heads going to the state, this is an extreme, again, I don't think it would happen, but in the case that a department head would go and lobby anywhere or in the state especially that was not the adopted position. That could be very counterproductive and harmful to our position. But I'd like, rather than dwell on the what I would think would be rare circumstances and people not complying, when we put together our legislative package, which Ms. Kuhn and Young will be are literally working on right away, that includes recommendations from department heads. We work together. This is what we've done every year to put together our legislative package. So again, I think there's going to be, I'd rather focus on the compliance than perhaps the few people that I don't know why they ever would lobby in contrary to what our adopted position is, Mr. Chairman. So thank you.
Very good. Any other concerns, Ms. Torres?
Did you want
to hear from Mr. Grady, or would that be helpful to you? Or
if the committee would like to hear from the council, I obviously would cede to your authority. We obviously still disagree that this is still an overreach of authority into administrative, regardless of if it's a once-off in the next 10 years or would happen on a daily basis. It's still getting into an area that we believe is an overreach.
Okay. All right. Well, if you're telling me it wouldn't matter to you what Corporation Council would say, then we won't call it off unless there's a concern from other members. Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious if this ordinance change were adopted without Section 6 regarding penalty, and perhaps Corporate Council, since we're talking about him, could clarify. If that section were not in there, what recourse would the board or any law enforcement official have if the ordinance was violated without a penalty clause?
That was the question, Mr. Grady.
Okay. If you'll allow.
Mr. Grady, would you please join us? Have you seen this, or do you have a copy? Could we provide you one, please? We're talking about the final section, Section 6, lines 124 through 126.
Mr. Chairman, to clarify my question, I'm wondering if an ordinance change like this were adopted and there is no penalty clause within the ordinance or attached somehow, what would happen in theory with an adopted ordinance if it were violated, if there's no penalty stated?
Mr. Chairman, an ordinance that creates a duty on a county official that doesn't have a fine or forfeiture is not going to be enforceable by by law enforcement. It's just a question of who enforces the violation. So you have an ordinance that says you shall not exceed your budget. But if you do exceed your budget, it's a violation of the ordinance, let's say. I don't think that's actually in an ordinance, but let's assume it was. The question is who enforces that? And I think ultimately, in terms of civil service employees, it's someone bringing charges against that civil service employee at the PRB for discharge or discipline. For non-civil service employees, with a couple of exceptions, they serve, generally speaking, at the pleasure of the county executive. And so the county executive either discharges them or disciplines them in some fashion. Most employees, again, with a couple exceptions, don't serve at the pleasure of the county board. They serve at the pleasure of the county executive. So I think the answer to your question is an ordinance like this that had that sets a standard of behavior without any penalty clause that officers of the employee of the county are supposed to follow would be enforced by the county executive.
Mr. Chairman, my question then would be, with a penalty clause incorporated as it's written, if an appointee of the county executive were to violate this, does the county executive have to enforce that if they're serving at his pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I think the answer to that is the county executive should enforce that, like any other provision of the county ordinances. The county executive is supposed to enforce all the ordinances. So the answer is yes, he should. But if you're trying to ask me whether the county board can make him do that, I'm a little hesitant about that.
And, Mr. Chairman, am I to understand then from Corporate Counsel that Clause 6 of this ordinance change would really only affect civil service employees from the perspective of the county board of enforcement. Because it wouldn't affect elected officials, and it wouldn't affect really appointees.
Arguably, it wouldn't affect civil service employees because only the Civil Service Commission can establish the grounds for discharge of civil service employees. We have civil service rules that set forth the grounds for discharge. Now, you might look at this as being incorporated into one of those civil service rules, perhaps, but technically speaking, this is more advisory, I think, than anything else, because it's not stated in a Civil Service Commission rule. Now, there are Civil Service Commission rules that are broad enough that might incorporate this language, but it's not specifically stated there. So I would see this, since it's outside of the Civil Service Commission process, it's not been adopted by that commission, it's more advisory by the county board that we would like employees who violate this ordinance to be disciplined or discharged. It's advisory to the county executive that that's what we would like to have happen. I guess what I'm telling you in a long-winded way is that I don't know whether Section 6 adds anything legally to the ordinance, that violation of the ordinance already carries a penalty implicitly of discharge for violating ordinances by the county executive for non-civil service employees. For civil service employees, I don't have the rules in front of me. I would guess there's a rule that says violation of the county ordinances is grounds for discharge. So I guess all I'm trying to say is I think this last paragraph, it's not harmful to have it in there, but I don't think it's technically required.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I then have a question regarding Section 5. I suppose for the author, Chairwoman Dmitrievich, I'm wondering if she would be opposed to an amendment that would insert language in line 116. It currently reads, nothing in Section 4 above. I'm considering proposing amending to insert the language or the remainder of this section so that it qualifies not just Section 4 but also the statements in Section 5 below. So it would read, nothing in Section 4 above or the remainder of this section shall be construed.
Okay. Let me look at that, please. Yeah, that's fine. That's acceptable.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, my next question is of the same nature for the author. In line 118, I'll just read from the beginning then, if I were to propose an amendment. Nothing in Section 4 above or the remainder of this section shall be construed as preventing any elected official from engaging in lobbying activities as an individual. At that point, I would be interested in proposing adding the words or in their official capacity, comma, and then continue as written if they make clear that they're not representing the position of Milwaukee County. That would, section amendment would ensure that we as elected officials truly can, you know, not just as a private citizen, but as our position as an elected official state, this is my position, this is what I lobby for. I am the county supervisor or I am the county executive or whatever the position is, but yet this is not the official, this does not match the official position of the county. So there's still that clause there that they have to make that information available.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Supervisor Chairman.
Yeah, just want to keep a conversation with you. That's fine. I think that's the spirit and the intent. It's just we want to be very clear that that if you're lobbying as an elected official, whether it be the county executive or the county supervisors or department heads, not as an elected official, that you're obviously a freedom of speech is fine, but you need to be clear on what position you're representing. So I think I don't see that language changing that, and I'm fine with those changes.
Thank you. With that then, Mr. Chairman, I would move to amend as described at line 116 after the word above, adding or the remainder of this section, and at line 118 after the word individual, adding a comma state and the words or in their official capacity. and I'll pass this in writing to the clerk.
All right. Do members feel they heard the amendment, that they understand the two changes on line 116? I'll just restate it before I call the question on that. The amendment, Supervisor Alexander, is to add on line 116 after the word above, or the remainder of this section, and to add on line 118 after the word individual, or in their official capacity. That is the amendment. Call the roll.
Alexander.
Aye.
Broderick.
Aye.
Dmitrievich.
Aye.
Roma West.
Aye.
Cohen.
Aye.
Taylor.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The amendment is approved.
All right. And Supervisor Dmitrievich's motion is now to approve the amended substitute resolution.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Any other comments, questions from committee?
Madam Chair, Clerk. Supervisors, and who is making that motion?
Supervisor Dmitriev.
Alexander.
Aye.
Broderick.
Aye.
Dmitrievich.
Aye.
Roma West.
Aye.
Cohen.
Aye.
Taylor.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to approve the substitute as amended is approved.
Thank you.